Good evening. I declare the meeting open. The first thing is we acknowledge we're on the traditional lands of the Kaurna people. We respect their elders past and present. Welcome to members of the public especially. I'll let you know that the audio of the meeting is recorded and subsequently that'll be posted on the Marion Council website. Minutes come out on Friday. I ask any elected members if they foresee any item where there might be a conflict of interest in the agenda. If not, then we'll keep going. Would someone like to move that we accept the written communications reports? Moved, Councillor Telfer, seconded, Councillor Schilling. All those in favour? Carried unanimously. Thank you. And I think this is one of those times when we have the ability for elected members to give a verbal report. So if anyone wishes to, Councillor Hull.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. I'll keep it brief because of the size of our agenda tonight, but it's basically just to acknowledge the efforts of the staff to deal with a number of graffiti outbreaks in the Warrikowie ward, both in Dover Gardens and in Warradale. The quick action is appreciated and the residents appreciate it as well. Thank you.
Any other reports? Thank you, members, for your brevity. Would someone like to move confirmation of the minutes of the last General Council meeting? Councillor Schilling, seconded Councillor Duncan. All those in favour? Carried unanimously. Thank you. And so now we come to two deputations, one in relation to the Mitchell Park Sports and Community Grounds, and these two are dealt with in the order in which they've come to us. Members can see on page 24 of the agenda, reference to the deputations. And we have Kylie Weekly here, who's president of the Mitchell Park Netball Club. Kylie, are you here? Yeah. Ah, yes, there you are. Please come forward. We've got a spot for you up here. And Mr. Haridis, our general manager, will instruct you on using the microphone. So you have 5 minutes, and if you do finish early, that'll leave ample time for questions if elected members have any. Of course, we're very familiar with the project. Over to you.
Hello, everyone. Hi, council members. Thanks for having us along tonight. Obviously, we're just here to talk about the Mitchell Park Sports Club redevelopment and the need for the netball club and the tennis club to have at least two external courts. In the development plans at the moment, we've only had an option for one tennis court, and the netball has been moved into the stadium to share with the likes of the South Adelaide Basketball Club and Volleyball Club. We would just really like to put forward that for the growth of both the netball club and the tennis club, we would really need to have the space to be able to use the courts when they're required by us. If we're trying to share the space with basketball, who have already indicated that they could be using the courts 7 days a week, then we just don't have any option to be able to move our training sessions or run any of our NetSetGo programs around basketball. It just makes it very difficult. So we would, both of the clubs, both tennis and netball, are currently either training or playing away from the club. We've been involved at Mitchell Park for a long time, and it's really, heartbreaking in the sense that a lot of the redevelopment has been focused around bringing new people into the centre rather than helping the ones that have already been there. This has been a very long journey for a lot of us with the redevelopment. So we know that Raylene has put forward a motion to be able to extend the costing as such for the use of those external courts with some lighting so that both the netball and the tennis can then get their needs met within the scope of the redevelopment as well. If we're also asking that we know that there's going to be a lot of additional car parking space that's going to be included in the redevelopment, and we just ask that if it can't be come about now that we have these external courts, that we still ask that space be left available so that in the future, if there is another option for expansion, then we still get to have that space available, and that it's not just filled up with more car park, and that there'll never be an option for tennis or netball. But obviously with the work that the council has done in getting the funding for this by both the federal government and state governments, it, as for a netball club, it would be beyond belief that we could get back to where we started. At the moment, we're training up at Morfitt Vale. The club started by partners of the footballers, so it would be nice to be able to have that family environment back again, where we could have, you know, the guys off playing football, the girls playing netball. We really want to expand into the Saturday competitions as well as keeping with our Wednesday night competitions. So to be able to have that growth, we really do need some space of our own to be able to have that court usage.
Thank you. Do any members have, a few members have some questions? Councillor Schilling.
Thank you for coming tonight and having a discussion with us about Mitchell Park. I just want to touch base. You mentioned the new sort of stadium that we're planning on building at Mitchell Park. Mm-hmm. I just want to know, are you aware that it is not exclusively for basketball? It seems to me that you seem to think that it is exclusively for basketball.
No, we're aware that it is planned as a multi-use stadium with the use of basketball, netball, volleyball, potentially somebody else who wants to come in. We're just, I guess it's just being able to, when we would be able to use it compared to the basketball club, which at the moment is a lot bigger than the netball club. I would imagine that their needs are a lot higher. At the moment, we might suggest that we only need the use of the stadium 2 hours a week, but we might want to extend that to 4 or 5 hours, and then it's about, I guess, having a fight as to who's going to be using the stadium, and that's why we would really like to have the external courts available. Yeah.
Perhaps before I go to other members, perhaps we should hear from staff on that question. And I say that because a few years ago, when the initial designs were being talked about, I do recall a figure of about 3/4 basketball, 1/4 other, in terms of anticipated use at the stadium. So is that still being discussed as a potential model? That's one question. But also, who does get to decide the allocation of times for the stadiums for the different sports? Who could answer that from staff? Mr. Haridis?
I will take that question, just looking if any of our team on this particular matter is around. With respect to any of the history of potential splits of use, I would need to take that particular question on notice, but certainly discussions about all of the potential users who are present and interested, having those mapped against the preferred times for current demand and potential future demand, that is a piece of work that has been mapped and can continue to be mapped if any user requirements change. With regard to the second question on who decides, we would be presenting any information that would create attention with recommendations, because typically sporting groups are all after the sort of post 4 p.m. time on weeknights, and then the weekend time for match days and game time, is seeing where the clashes of demand are, and then looking at a decision profile for where we might need to make a decision, and that potentially would come back through ward briefings or through the chamber if the demand is that high against the available space at the venue.
Other questions? Councillor Crossland.
Thank you, Your Worship, and thanks for coming in. I'm fairly disappointed that we're at this late stage before you've had the opportunity to say that you are not being fully supported with netball. If we secured you the 2 hours on a Wednesday night, would that actually establish the club back there?
Wednesday night is actually when we're playing games at the moment. We're training on Monday nights. If we had the training venue for the hours that we needed, then we would, yes, definitely be able to come back. But as I said previously, we're also potentially need to look at the growth of our club. And if we can only get secured 2 hours per week, we don't have that time for potential growth with bringing in junior programs and intermediate programs.
Councillor Pryor, then Councillor Valescu.
Yeah, my question got addressed. Thanks, Mr. Mayor.
Well, Valescu.
Yeah, I guess if there are the two courts, would that allow your club and also the tennis club to be masters of their own domain as far as being able to facilitate activities, not having to worry about clashing timetables? How would you see that benefit as opposed to maybe securing some times?
Well, obviously, the netball and tennis club would be able to work closely together to be able to secure who needs to use what times for the two courts. Obviously, tennis just can't function at the Mitchell Park Sports Club without having two courts, because to play competition tennis, you need to have at least two courts. But we would definitely be able to have more of a scope to be able to work with each other as to when people need it for training times and game times.
And sorry, that does lead to a consequential question. I thought that to have competition, a tennis club would need four courts, but I don't know, Mr.
Well, they can at least go with two courts, because I think we've been pretty much told in the master plan that four courts would just be unattainable at this stage. So if they can at least get the two courts, they can have competition tennis back at Mitchell Park Sports and Community Club. One tennis court just isn't enough at all.
And do we have staff advice on that, on the number of courts that tennis would require for competition games?
Consistent with the advice received from the tennis club, two courts is what they've said would allow them to play competition tennis at that venue.
Thanks. Any other questions from members? Councillor Hull?
A question that derives from some of the answers given. The quest by certain people to have four courts on this site, if that was to happen, how would you receive that? And are there any anxieties attached to that happening? You've already cited that you're concerned about the dominance of basketball, okay? I don't know why that has happened, because you were there first. Basketball's not even there. Yep. And yet we've got a club stepping aside saying, oh, we're getting pushed aside, outside, literally, because...
So if you could come to the question. Thanks, Councillor Hull.
So I'd like to know whether you have any anxieties about being muscled around by basketball, because that seems to be happening already.
I mean, obviously there is some anxieties that... as a long-standing tenants of the Mitchell Park, that it seems the stadium has become what the redevelopment has been built around now. And that's why we're hoping that if we can have what we need, then those anxieties will no longer be there.
Yep. Any other questions? Then thanks, Ms. Weekly. You may return to the public gallery if you can find a seat. Now, sometimes with these matters where we've had a deputation, there's a move to bring forward the item on the agenda. Any member is within their rights to move that that occurs. The only concern I have is that if we don't have staff here who are directly involved in the project, there might be some detail that's missing, and I only say that from Mr. Haridis's contribution earlier. Mr. Haridis, do you have a view on that?
Through the chair, the view would be, depending on where the conversation goes, it might be, if it's highly detailed, that some questions may have to be taken on notice for this evening in response to the motion later in the agenda. I can't anticipate what the questions would be and the level of detail.
Councillor Valescu.
I suggest we deal with that motion now.
Right, so you're seeking leave of the meeting for that motion on page 351 to come forward to now. Is leave granted? So just let me know if anyone is not happy with that. Okay, there are some people not happy with it, so we'll do that as a procedural motion. So, Councillor Valescu, if you're moving that the second multi-use court item be dealt with forthwith, is that seconded? Councillor Telfer. So now I'll just put that to a vote. All those in favour? All those against? That's carried, so we'll deal with the matter now. We're on page 351. Councillor Telfer to move. I beg your pardon, procedural or point of order, Councillor Crossland?
Can then I'd like to move a deferral of that item.
That would be a direct revocation of what we've just... Oh, I see what you mean. You want to put it off to another meeting. So that is a different question. I'll just ask our governance manager.
Yeah, it's a procedural motion.
So... That is in order, so that's a move to defer. Any particular council meeting?
I'm happy for it to come to the next general council meeting. Am I able to say the reason why?
There's no debate allowed, but I'll let you make a brief statement about it.
Look, I think from the answers we received from the lady doing the deputation, there are a lot of unanswered questions. We're jumping to a solution when we haven't really established the other options. I'd like to know if we can secure fixtures. There's two courts inside the stadium. I think there's an option there to secure that for the netball. They were the first ones there, and I think they should get preferential treatment. That's my own opinion, but I think it's worthy of debate and staff
opinion.
Okay,
well, yeah, getting into that debate now. So the question is whether the motion to defer to the next General Council meeting is seconded. Councillor Hull seconds that.
Mr Mayor, could I just ask that when or if it does come back to Council, that we have the appropriate staff here to answer
yes.
the questions? A major
yep.
project.
I'm sure Mr Haridis is taking that on board. That's put directly to a vote. Those in favour of deferral, raise your hand. Those against, raise your hand. That's carried, so that item is now deferred to the next General Council meeting. A division is called by Councillor Valescu. So those, I'll just explain for members of the, sorry, it's a procedural motion. No, I'm informed by a governance manager, no division allowed on such matters. So we can... sorry, Councillor Valescu, but that's called out of order. So we can go to the next deputation. As members can see on page 25, we have Sharon Lindley to give us a deputation. So please come forward. Again, Mr. Haridis will just explain how the microphone works. So you've got 5 minutes, but if you finish early, that just leaves ample time for questions.
Your Worship, so just...
At a point of order, Councillor
I just wanted to clarify for the members in the gallery that there will be no more discussion on the issue of Mitchell Park, so if they do choose to leave now, we won't be offended?
Well, it's a funny kind of point of order, but I appreciate your consideration for those in the gallery. So if you were here for the Mitchell Park item, feel free to leave because we won't be addressing that issue tonight. We won't be offended, but you are welcome to stay for the next 2.5 hours or so if you wish. Got lots of good stuff coming up in the next 350 pages, so you're welcome to stay, but you can leave if you wish. All right, over to you, Ms. Lindley. Thank you.
Good evening. My name is Sharon Lindley and I'm a privileged resident of Marion Council. I'd like to thank the Mayor, for this opportunity to speak with the Council in regards to the motion declaring a climate change emergency, which will be put forward this evening. I never thought I'd be lobbying for a climate change emergency even 6 months ago, and I certainly didn't think I'd be wearing a Greenpeace t-shirt. I've never lobbied or protested in my life. I became aware of the devastating effects of climate change that we're experiencing right now. I won't be going through environmental facts tonight. I leave that to you. I feel an immeasurable responsibility speaking because I'm very aware I'm representing not just people in the Marion Council, but the majority of residents in Australia. Australian research that I could find from the ABC News through to the Australian Institute shows between 68 to 80% of Australians believe we are in a climate emergency and action is required now. So why declare a climate emergency? It's just a statement. So why indeed? If you're doing the work, isn't that enough? Isn't action what's required and more effective than the word? It's just rhetoric. It's just a sweeping political statement. At this point, I acknowledge that the Marion Council has done commendable work with different programs, as well as the Resilient South program in conjunction with Onkaparinga, Mitcham and Holdfast Bay councils. So getting back to it's just words, climate change emergency, it leads to another question. Why have Mitcham and Holdfast Bay councils, who are working hard with Marion, why have they seen it appropriate to declare a climate emergency? So I asked them. I got answers like, it shows leadership. And interestingly enough, puts responsibility onto the community as well. The same councillor believed if company directors can be held responsible for decisions made in regards to climate change, so can councillors. I also asked a couple of councillors from Adelaide City Council. They were quite happy to confirm the passing of their declaration was partly due to the personal litigation that could eventuate if the council was seen not to do all that was needed for the climate change. Sarah Barker from Minter Ellison gave a very sobering talk to the Adelaide City Council about the impact of climate change on property values and insurance premiums. And on the 18th of this month, Minter Ellison have a separate advisement titled Climate Change Risks for Local Government, in which they state, and I quote, local governments need to be actively considering the impacts of climate change on all aspects of business. That is a formidable statement. I've noted that there is another motion for this evening called headed Climate Motion, which does not refer in any way to the impacts of climate change on all aspects of business by Marion Council, as suggested by Minter Ellison, but I'm quite happy to be corrected on that. That was my understanding. I feel the declaration of climate change emergency could be seen as a mission statement, that's my personal opinion, where every decision the council makes comes from a position of understanding the dire environmental circumstances we find ourselves in. And mitigating, not adapting. You can only adapt to an eroding coastline for so long. You have to fix the bigger problem. I also believe there is strength and leadership in joining the 16 other councils in South Australia, 19 in Australia, 1,392 councils worldwide. Just as you are being part of a resilient South group demonstrates the importance of working together, so does Marion Council declaring a climate emergency to the rest of the world. It shows the world we concur, we're with you, and it shows the residents we are not alone in our efforts. As the Holdfast Bay Council Climate Emergency Declaration and the Climate Change Emergency put forward tonight both state, and I quote again, progressively embed. So the wonderful work that the Marion Council is currently doing doesn't stop. So that the Environmental Strategy Initiative of 2021 Business Plan becomes, if you will, part of the culture of the Marion Council. Standing with other Australians, setting targets, and constant vigilance are just a few of the differences between a climate motion being tabled this evening and declaring a climate change emergency. So on behalf of all the people, please vote in favour of the motion to declare a climate emergency that will contribute to saving the very... This is ridiculous. Saving the very air and water needed for your children and for your friends' children. Thank you for your time.
Thank you. The congratulations are in order up to a point, but thank you. Now, members, any questions? Well, thank you, Ms. Lindley, for your presentation. You may return to the gallery. And as I was suggesting with that previous deputation, there's the possibility. There is the possibility of bringing the two relevant motions forward. There are two dealing with climate change on the agenda on pages 335 and 359. Would anyone object if we moved them forward to deal with them now? I put it to the meeting. Does any member object if we brought forward the two climate change motions? Yes. So if any member wants to bring one or both of those motions forward, I'd invite them to move a motion. Otherwise, we'll continue with the agenda. Councillor Valescu?
I'm happy to move that the two are brought forward if the meeting so desires.
Very well. Is that seconded? Councillor Telfer. So I'll put that to a vote. All those in favour, raise your hand. All those against, raise your hand. So that is carried. So with the leave of the meeting, we'll deal first with the motion on page 335 and then the motion on page 359. So Councillor Holt, over to you.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. I didn't ask any questions of our deputation because I thought she nailed it. I thought she absolutely nailed it. And all I can do, apart from the facts and reality that she presented to us tonight, is talk about my experience with this. In 1992, there was a declaration in Rio. And the following year, I was elected to this council and I was sent to the city of Newcastle to a Rio Earth Summit. And that's when I first became aware that we had a problem. And maybe I haven't done enough since 1992. Maybe I haven't. Maybe all of us haven't done enough since 1992 when we first, as a world, started to talk about this. In the last council term, I was sent to another conference in Melbourne about climate change. And that's where I realised that councils in Melbourne were leaving us for dead in terms of climate change. I also supported the council right from the get-go to be involved in Resilient South. But Resilient South is about mitigation and adaptation. It does not address climate change per se. It's all about how well we build our bunker, how well we actually slide under a rock and try and survive. That's all we're doing. Now, the audit, we actually got a report done that went to the audit committee, a very good report, and that cited a number of shortcomings with this organisation, namely our fleet, where we've got 4 or 5 hybrid cars. I think Raylene Telfer and I have 2, and the community would be better represented than this organisation. Now, we have a solar charging station up at Tonsley for electric vehicles, but we haven't got a vehicle to plug into it.
Time's expired. Is that motion seconded? Councillor Telfer.
I come tonight not because of public pressure, but from my own personal stance again, because I have tried at least over the last 20 years to live simply, cycling, low energy house, everything I could do. And last year, council also made a list of everything it could do within its constraints and the way it could work. I'm proud of what the council did, the actual actions it improved and worked on in the last year. I'm proud particularly that we have changed all the lights in the city, that we have worked on solar cells. We have worked in many directions. But it's an inconvenient truth that there are three levels of government, and tonight I need to take a stance myself personally, because I am committed to the Paris targets, and I need to live with that cohesive way of looking at life. So I believe very strongly that we need very much to act responsibly, and I want to do that.
Anyone speaking against? Councillor Blescu?
Yes, Your Worship. As members would be aware, I've said this before, I've been aware of the greenhouse effect since the late 80s as a child, and it scared me, and now we see it become a reality, what they predicted. I think that I don't agree with us declaring the emergency, and I know that a lot of people see it as a bit of a clarion call for action, and I can understand the frustration that the community has, that there has been a lack of action on government and in some levels of industries. But I think we can be leaders by actually acting, and acting in a way that doesn't lend itself to any criticism or belittling. I saw Barnaby Joyce attacking Joel Fitzgibbon when he talked about they're going to come up with an idea for, you know, some sort of carbon neutrality, and just getting hammered because there's no detail. I see the climate emergency attracting that same sort of thing. Last year, when the LGA knocked back the climate emergency stuff, David Pembenith, he labelled it as undergraduate silliness. I don't want the important issue of climate change trivialised like that. And I think this can trivialise it. I support everything that people are saying about the action that needs to be done and what needs to be done. But I think we just should look at what we're doing and try to do the best we can and aim for carbon neutrality and actually have some costed amounts. You know, why couldn't this be brought up after we got the report? That's the thing. You know, why did the community know about this instead of the councillors, before the councillors know? Because it's not the converted people we need to convince to get change, it's the other people. And by having issues that are polarising and an approach that is polarising and getting attacked when we don't agree enough is not going to get the change that we need broadly. And it's not going to help the issue, and it's not going to help the planet.
Anyone else speaking in favour? Councillor Pryor?
Yeah, I have a question for Mr. Scull.
Question? Mr. Scull.
Mr. Scull, tomorrow morning when you come to work, if this motion gets up, what changes?
Through the Chair, thank you. Interesting question. Our team will carry on doing the great work that they're doing, which is actually standing Marion out from the crowd, and I'm very proud, as Councillor Telford said, of the work that they're doing. The motion actually calls for, and I quote, an environmental strategy by April 2020. I'm a little bit concerned that that's not achievable, and we're working on a carbon neutral plan, as discussed in a forum in February, by June 2020. So I'd love consideration of that if this does get up, that we can consider that date, because I don't think it's going to be possible to deliver it by April 2020. But the question is, what will change? Certainly, it's going to galvanise attention on the things that we can do perhaps a little bit more, and I recognise the public support for this motion. So they're definitely, we always have a review of council meetings the day after, and we'll be talking about how this motion gets up and what we can do to deliver on a carbon neutral plan by 2020, etc. So there will be discussion about it. I hope that answers the question.
Any other questions or speakers? Then, Councillor Hull, you get to close the debate.
Thank you. The April 2020 date is about an environmental strategy. Now, if this council's already done the legwork, as we keep hearing, it should be relatively easy to put that on paper. It should be very easy to couple it together. And basically, it's basically a whole of agency approach, which takes in our built form, how we build our council buildings, how we actually deal with development, trees, and all of that, which really should be half cooked already. So I don't think we're asking for too much, and it also needs to be done before the budget. So, you know, it has to be done before the 2021 budget, and April gives plenty of time for the administration to get their head around that. Now, to quote David Pemberthy from 5AA, a well-known organisation that are not that inclined to acknowledge climate change, I think is a bit of a stretch here tonight. And action and targets, well, that's what this motion's all about. It actually sets some timeframes and sets some aspirational targets for us to work towards. And I say to Councillor Valescu, with foreshadowing his motion, no more reports. Like, you know, we'll just keep getting reports and we'll keep compiling reports. And there's a whole layer of reports gathering dust. And meantime, we're doing nothing. Why can't we just do what the other councils to our east and west have done and actually acknowledge this and get on with it and work with those councils? In the motion, it talks about working with our adjoining councils. Let's actually not be slow followers with this and actually work and partner with our neighbouring councils to actually get on with this on behalf of our region. And we can actually achieve a lot if we had a regional approach.
Thank you. All those in favour, raise your hand. All those against, raise your hand. The motion is negatived. So we'll go on to the next motion regarding climate change, page 359. Councillor Valescu to move.
Thank you, Your Worship. I'd just like to just make a couple of changes. Just put in options for carbon neutrality by 2030. And for council's functions, I actually meant what we do, not our social events. So if people want to change that to operations, that would be great. Essentially, I thank Councillor Hull for wanting us to work with other governments, local and federal and state, and that's actually what I'd like us to investigate. Also looking at how business can assist and maybe supporting those businesses within the City of Marion, especially Tonsley, where they are looking to look at more carbon reduction, one of those being looking at liquid hydrogen in the gas supply for one of our suburbs. This is about getting some information in order for us to know exactly what it costs in the next budget to look at that. Excuse me, Your Worship, this seems to be fighting for a noise.
I was just trying to ensure that your preferred wording was actually up on the screen. I'll try and keep order. Carry on.
Yeah, so it's actually about getting enough information and costing to start putting some of these things, putting our money where our mouth is for the next budget and knowing what's involved. And looking at other options as well. How can we provide incentive to encourage members of the community to do more and those that aren't doing anything?
Yep, carry on, Councillor.
Yes, sorry. And look, members, yeah, so it's actually about trying to further the issue. So, and if I'm not taking the route that people think is the way forward as far as the declaration, I think this is the way we can actually get the action. For me, it's about getting the action, getting the result. And if people...
Just let you finish that sentence if you want.
People think it's only one way of doing it, that we're allowed to have a difference of opinion. I respect the fact that I got some respectful emails, people raised the issues, and I put my view forward. And I think that if we are wanting to move forward, we need to be respectful. Where most of us are adults here, there are a few younger people in the audience, and that's good that they're interested. But I think we need to have a respectful relationship and move forward on the issue.
All right, thank you. Is that seconded? Councillor Gard? You wish to speak?
Make no mistake, members, this is something that I feel exceptionally strong about. I have studied sciences. I do understand the discussions. I don't admire hysteria, and I am very worried about the future of the mental health of young populations when we start to use words like emergency too soon. This council is a leader and is an acknowledged, recognised leader in climate change initiative. So let's make no mistake about that. We are doers, we're not flag wavers. I don't want anything to do with flag waving that's going to get into box-ons. What I do want to do is to see some concerted effort to continue what we're about. I'd like to see the rate uplifted. And I think Councillor Velescu's motion is right on the money. I think what we need to do is to bring it more into our strategic side faster. Both Councillor Velescu and I are on a committee that can do just that. And certainly if we make good headway, we will broadcast the headway we've made, but I'm not into taking sides and whipping up storms and then getting knocked down by people who are negative on the subject, and the subject then builds into a whirlpool of fear, the greatest victims of which are our children. And I have a number of grandchildren, let alone children.
Anyone speaking against? Councillor Hull.
Mr. Mayor, I do not accept we're leaders. I think that that's just outrageous to think we're leaders. I know better than that, and if we keep thinking we're leaders, we're actually a liability to this community. That's how I see it. And the other thing is, go back to the motion that this council moved 12 months ago. Moved Councillor Pfeiffer, seconded Councillor Velescu. That council, this is in response to my first climate change motion, that council acknowledges that more action is required by all levels of government globally to tackle climate change. Well, where did I see that? I think that's up there. Two, undertakes a review of climate change mitigation and adaptation changes, actions and changes delivered by the City of Marion to date, and receives costed recommendations in regards to potential tangible actions that the City of Marion could seek to prioritise in the short term to medium term. 12 months ago, Councillor Velescu seconded this motion. 12 months ago, we're no further advanced. We don't have costings or reports. So we just put it off for another 12 months because that's what's happened. And Councillor Gard voted for that as well. So, you know, please explain what's going on here. You know, actions, we want to do actions. Well, where is the action over the last 12 months, Mr. Mayor? And I put that to the administration as well. Because you haven't actually responded to even the motion that was put 12 months ago, let alone this one. So here we are, saying, oh, don't get worked up about this, don't worry the kiddies, you know. Well, my kids are worried, Councillor Gard. My daughter goes to the climate change strikes. Of course she's worried. Why wouldn't she be? I'm worried. Every time I go away into space.
The councillor's time's expired. Anyone else speaking in favour of the motion? Councillor Crossland.
It's just a couple of questions.
Questions,
if I
yes,
could ask
go ahead.
Of Ms Gibbons, if possible.
Gibbons, our manager in this area, is coming forward. Thank you.
Thank you, Your Worship. My first question is, look, we have asked that we would like a way of moving towards carbon neutrality, hopefully by 2030. I know you're working on a report to bring that to council. It's rather unusual we're actually making a decision before you've actually finished your report. It's not normally the way councils make decisions. Is there a way of getting that report done any sooner? Because the point I take from Councillor Hull is that in June we will be already setting the budget, and I just wondered if there was any movement on that.
Sure, thank you, through the chair. I think, so we've got a date that we're coming back to council to a forum in April, where there'll be an opportunity for members to put their ideas forward for the plan. And I think that will also be the opportunity for us to identify things that we can put into the budget for 2021. So those first year actions, the intent is to build a 10-year plan. So there will be opportunity, I think, at that time to identify some of those early actions for inclusion in that first year budget.
Councillor Crossland.
The next question is, And I asked this of everyone. I got about six emails on this topic, and I asked everyone to come up with an idea that we could look at that we aren't already doing. I actually got no one could come up with anything. I've heard that Mitcham and Holfast Bay are leaders by making a declaration. Can you tell me what they're doing in response to this climate emergency we're in, to use their term, and why aren't we doing it?
Gibbons.
Sure, again, through the chair. So City of Holfast Bay is developing their climate, their environment strategy as per their motion. That's still not completed yet. And Mitcham are developing a plan around their approach to climate carbon neutrality as well. So they're on a similar path to us, or a little bit behind us in terms of how they're developing that plan. We've actually started.
So they're behind us?
In terms of developing their carbon neutral plan, yes. In terms of actions, we're probably on a par. I mean, they've been changing over their street lighting, putting solar on buildings and that sort of thing. So we're all doing similar types of projects in that regard.
Third question, final question.
No question is, we were doing that well before they were doing that. I don't understand why we are followers and they're leaders. I just don't understand where the fact of that statement's coming from. And I just wondered if you could help with that.
No comment. Rightio. We'll take this opportunity, if you did want to enter the debate. No. Councillor Gard, you've spoken. Well, I think you've had the opportunity as well. I'll just ask if there's anybody else either speaking or with questions other than those who've already spoken. Then I'll ask Councillor Vlescu to close the debate, please.
Thank you, Your Worship. Look, I look forward and I hope that we can actually get a fair bit of costing ready for the next budget. Whilst I didn't agree with some of the things and the approach Councillor Hull made, I can understand that there might have been the expectation that that information would have been ready. But I guess a couple of months is not really that much, and there's a lot of work to go. I want us to see action on this issue. I think it is going to be one of the biggest challenges we're going to face. That we also need to be tactical in how we do it, and I don't think this is tactical. I've been involved in politics, and sadly sometimes the people that have the most similar views can get a bit disappointed when you're not at the same exact view as them. And I think we shouldn't lose sight of the big picture. So I guess, members, what is heartening here is that we don't actually have anyone on the council that I know of that is actually a climate sceptic, and we've had that before. You know, that the issues were coming up and people were saying that, oh, well, you have to do mining to get solar panels. We don't have that. People should understand that we're very lucky that everyone here has indicated that they believe in the science and they want to take action. And that's a positive thing. And the community needs to work together and not polarise. Okay, not everyone's going to agree at the same level, but if you agree, you get a compromise and you move forward. You know, there was the opportunity to have an emissions trading scheme. The Greens knocked it back. And then afterwards, we had the carbon tax, which was something that the government, new government at the time...
Point of order from Councillor Hull.
In closing the debate, you shouldn't introduce new information that wasn't discussed during the debate. Particularly attacking political parties.
I'll listen carefully. A factual statement was made. I'll just ask Councillor Vlescu to be mindful, perhaps with a closing sentence, in responding to the matters that have already been raised.
Well, I guess the thing is that when you have a situation where there wasn't that level of compromise, we're actually in a worse position now. So by not having emissions trading scheme, because it wasn't green enough, we don't have anything. By insisting on a carbon tax, which was political poison for the Labor Party, and they're to blame as well for choosing that, we have nothing.
All right, Councillor, thank you. I'll put it to a vote. All those in favour, raise your hand. All those in favour, raise your hand. That is carried unanimously. Thank you. Again, to those in the gallery, you're welcome to stay for the next 2 or 3 hours, but we have lots of gripping material, but you are welcome to take your leave. thank you for your respectful attention to our democratic process. So, councillors, we move on to confirmation of the minutes of the Infrastructure and Strategy Committee meeting, page 26. Would someone like to move accordingly? Councillor Schilling, is that second? Councillor Telfer, all those in favour? Carried unanimously, thank you. Now on page 36, Marion Vineyard's signage. Councillor Valescu.
Yes, Your Worship. I'd like to move, well, it's either option one or two. I prefer two. I'm just wondering if I could...
You could give us a page number so we're really clear on which picture you prefer.
Picture on number 40. I prefer 40 as opposed to 39, but I'm happy to get a bit of a straw poll, if you're through the chair, just to get an indication.
So you're moving suspension of standing orders?
Suspension of standing orders, yes.
Is that seconded? Councillor Schilling, all those in favour? All those against, carried. So, members, or perhaps, actually, if I could ask, is it, who's, Ms. Byrne?
Ms. Byrne's coming.
Just to summarise, perhaps to highlight the key differences between the options, and then we'll get an indication of preference before Councillor Valescu moves his motion.
Through the chair, the key differences were in direct response to the motion. So the original motion on notice said to either repurpose the existing brick wall or to actually provide an alternative. So we worked with a graphic artist to come up with repurposing the existing brick wall, which is a brown brick wall that actually states currently Marion Swimming Centre. So so the first two designs, which are the cheaper designs, are of course are just repurposing existing wall. The option three and four are demolishing the brick wall and putting something a bit more artistic in its place.
Right, so the two repurposing options, they're similar cost, not really much difference. And then on pages 41 and 42, you've got the now for something completely different, and they are come in at sort of 25 plus GST and 15,000 plus GST. So you've got two repurposing options, you've got two brand new presentation options. Councillor Villis, we're going to sort of out of the four of them. Are there any questions? I was just going to have a show of hands. So, Councillor Clancy, question?
In the motion, it indicates that it's the vines outside Marion Pool, which is in Mullawirra Ward, yet it wasn't in our ward briefing agenda and it was in Councillor Hull and Pryor's ward briefing. So I'm just wondering if I've got the location.
I think you've got the ward boundaries right, but can staff advise on that procedural point?
Through the chair, I guess I was responding because the original motion on notice actually came through Councillor Hull, so I guess that's why I had popped it on that brief briefing. Sorry.
Councillor Hull, in answer to your interjection, the question is not why it was on the Warrakowi ward briefing. No one's objecting to that. The question is why it wasn't on the briefing of the site, of the ward briefing where the site is actually situated. So I think it would be rather churlish to wish to exclude the ward councillors from a presentation about the proposal. Having said that, can we just say that that's been and done now? We'll have to move on. Or I guess the other option is you can indicate a preference. Yeah, you've got the right location. It's the one on the northern side of Oaklands Road. So, members, you've got four different options. Have you got a question, Councillor Hull?
Yeah, I have. I think the question is,
No, 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 not a speech. Do you have a factual question to explore with staff? No, well, you're heading down the wrong track. Do you have a factual question to explore with staff? So, sorry, it's question time. I mean, do you have a factual question of staff? This is not debating time.
Well, if the staff can actually talk about the merits of public art and,
well,
and how it can be juxtapositioned on the side of
science. No, that's self-evident from the portrayal in the images. Councillor Pryor?
Yeah, just a quick one for staff. We're looking to put a few signs through this area. So is this... We are looking to put a few signs through this area. So is this indicative of what we may receive for the other signs as well? And is there any plan for how many signs we're looking at through that Oakland's historic area?
So through the chair, I'm unaware of any other signs that are planned for that area. I guess I was just responding to the motion, the current motion. If I would assume that you would do signage that's in keeping with the entire area and relate one sign to another, because that's just logical and aesthetically pleasing.
Councillor Pryor, it sounds like we will eschew a strategic approach and take it on a case-by-case basis. You've heard of geofencing, so we'll just deal with what's geofenced in this project. Questions, any factual questions? Councillor Mason.
I was just going to ask, with option four, I noticed it says there's timber on there, so obviously there'll be some upkeep with maintaining the timber to make it look fresh and clean and all of that. So is that factored into prices, the cost going forward? Or
Ms. Byrne?
Through the chair, the ongoing costs of upkeep for this sign is not factored in. This is actually install and delivering the sign as you see it here. Yes, so that's right, thank you. So Mr. Lyons reminded me that it's a hardwood timber, so the maintenance is actually quite low.
If there are no more factual, question? Well, no, please, no. Because what I wanted to do was take a straw poll on the four options. So you just in order of the ones they appear in the agenda, you've got the current brick wall, rendered and Marion Heritage vines. You've got one with a different design. You've got then the two different proposals, one with more wood and one with less wood. But let's just put a hands up. It's non-binding for options 1, 2, 3, 4. Okay, option one, option two, option three, option four. I think I counted about five hands there between the two of you. I think without further ado, we can go back to Councillor Valescu to move a motion, guided, if you wish, from that exercise. So I resume standing orders, and you can test whichever option you prefer, Councillor Valescu.
Your Worship, look, I would love to have something very, very fancy, but I think that it's probably not the most responsible spend. I will go for option one. It is a bit more of a classic look. However, I understand if it's not popular, then option two is the next most popular option at a similar cost. I just think it's a little bit more classic font. The second one may date a little bit. And also the reason, unfortunately, the other two options could present challenges for people that may want to see how strong the signs are. And there are a lot of people like that, sadly, in that general vicinity. I put option one to the members.
Is that seconded, Councillor Crossland? You wish to speak?
Thank you. I'll get my statement in sooner or later. Look, I'm going for option one. It's got the classic heritage look. It's not over expensive. And rather bizarrely, from a crime prevention point of view, it will actually stand the test of time. Sadly, we've got something at the Heron Way. We had a bit of art which looks like a climbing frame. I'd say it's probably only actually been functional since it opened about a week. It breaks all the time. It's not usable, and it looks not a great piece of art when it's got all that red and white tape around it all the time. So let's just stick with something simple that's actually going to stand up to maybe the test of time in that area.
Anyone speaking against? Councillor Pryor.
Not against, just a question. Can someone from staff please chase up the other signs that we're looking for Oaklands? Because they've been on our ward briefing since October, and I think they're in draft, like with the Marion Heritage Society. So if we're going to make one sign...
Could that be recorded in the question on notice register?
That could definitely be recorded in the question on
notice. Taken away and further information returned.
It just seems silly to design one sign when we're going to go and design a couple more later.
All right, so that point will be recorded, and I'm sure there'll be discussion at your next board briefing. Then, Councillor Telfer? No, that would be a direct negative at this point, but happy to come back to you if this vote fails. So, Councillor Vlescu, anything more to say in closing?
I would like to see that there's signage on the rest of the vineyards as well in the other wards.
So I'll put the motion. All those in favour of option one? All those against? It's carried by majority. I didn't even get a chance to ask my questions. So like with the options three and four, can you skate on them?
No, but that'd look pretty.
No. Thank you. Next item is Cats, page 45. Isn't it start midnight? Midnight. Touch me. No, that, actually, I get done for harassment if you sing that song. Then you'll know what happiness is. Now, Cats, Councillor. Crossland.
Thank you, Your Worship. I would like to move the motion as printed, but I would like to remove in point 7 the 10 p.m. to 6 a.m. The reason for that is I just think that adds another level of complication, and I think fixed times are much better unless you're going to go with the sunrise or sunset. I'd be open to that, but otherwise changing times just don't always work, so I'll move without those times in at this stage.
9 to 7.
Yep. Please.
All right. Did you wish to... That's your contribution, or
I'll make a brief contribution.
Yes,
look, we've discussed this. We've adapted it. We've taken the gauntlet was thrown down by the minister. He told us it wasn't anything to do with the government, and that council should actually initiate this. I now understand he's saying it is the government, and we probably should leave it alone. But I think we'll go with his first advice. I think we should be doing something. We can't just sit around and wait. It was clear from the public consultation. This was one of the biggest feedbacks I've seen since I've been on council. The public are very supportive. I was unaware of all the additional problems the cats were causing in the neighbourhoods. My focus was more on the feral cats and the damage to the wildlife. But I would recommend this motion, if nothing else, based on the feedback from our very residents.
Seconded, Councillor Hull.
With the indulgence of the mover, I'd like to add a point 10 that a report be brought back to Council 6 months after the introduction of the bylaw to advise Council of the status of of how the bylaw has been applied, apprehensions, releases, and all the other information we might need. I think we need to measure a bylaw.
Just to pause there, Councillor Crossland, you're willing to entertain that?
I'm happy. I don't know whether we just use the words brought back to council in 6 months for a review of the impact of the bylaw, maybe?
Easier if we keep it general than trying to sketch it in detail, Councillor Hull.
Yep, I'm happy with that. In seconding it, Mr. Mayor, this is a good one to be involved in. I put this to the test. I went to the people with this. Mr. Mayor, I went to the last election with this. It was printed clearly in my election material. People knew what I stood for on this. Fortunately, I'm here to second in the motion. Councillor Crosland's covered a lot of the points about the concerns of our community, the spraying of people's washing in the front doors, and the destruction and the damage to their cats. The cat fights at night, the noise, and also obviously the wildlife. The cat tracker program that was studied by this council indicated how far they travel at night. The evidence was there. And I think we've all detected a level of support from the community. This has been well tested in the media by this council, and I think that Councillor Crosland's right. We need to go back to Mr. Spears, the member for Black, and advise him that we've actually carried out what he asked us to do, and that is create a bylaw, because the intent of the council at the time was to get state government legislation. Now, I still think that cats won't respect council boundaries, that they will cross council boundaries, regardless of what our bylaw says, and it needs to be broader, but this is a starting point, and I think that by moving this motion, we're actually providing advocacy back to the state government for a much broader, comprehensive approach. Glenthorne National Park, Mr. Mayor, think about the benefits of this bylaw on that park alone, let alone the Oakland's wetlands, where migratory birds do come and nest now in numbers, and you know there's increasing numbers of those, and this motion goes some of the way to protect those birds.
Thank you, Councillor Hull. And just on that comment, I know that the Minister for the Environment follows Council's deliberations very closely. I'm sure he'll be aware of the bylaw and the decision tonight. Anyone speaking against? A question from Councillor Gard.
It's probably a popular question for management, Your Worship. I notice and I agree with the queries that some people are making or resistance that they're putting up to how do we control our cats? And I'm wondering if we're in the knowledge of what's been done before us by the municipalities and or what we might be able to do through the, is it the Cat Association or similar, to educate people to enable them to better meet the bylaw requirements.
Who would like to answer that? Ms. Perrin or Mr. Della Coombs?
Perhaps I'll start, thank you, through the chair. So the cat management plan, which was released by the board, Dog and Cat Management Board, sets out a plan of action really to deal with animal management. And in conversations, it has been recognised that a statewide approach is needed, and that aspects of this bylaw would aid in that, but that a united plan of action across council borders, as Councillor Hull pointed out, would indeed go further to manage this issue. And we continue those conversations and continue to research best practices or future practices in terms of dealing with this, and would bring that knowledge back to council for consideration.
Anyone speaking against? Councillor Duncan.
I'm speaking against the cat law again. I have found since this has been up for discussion, I've talked to a lot of people about it, the people that are good cat owners and responsible cat owners are feeling hard done by, and also the people that are on varying rosters that can't fit within the timeframes that we've set. I like the changes, daylight to, saving to as also during winter. That gives a little bit of leeway, and that I would agree with. I don't agree with giving microchip readers to the local community, because there are unscrupulous people in the community that are just saying that they're going to kill the cats anyway. And it's inhumane and not done properly. And even when they're told that there are only three people or three areas that will look after the putting down the cats, they don't care. And that's why I'm going against this.
Anyone else speaking in favour? Councillor Lescu.
Thank you, Your Worship. Look, it is an issue for people that the cat's coming in and doing things in people's yards, also an issue in some of our sensitive areas. I did ask when this initially came whether we can have some suggestions as far as how we can assist people to do the right thing if they want. You know, whether we look at the opportunity for subsidised cat cages or that netting people put across in their dwellings, because I don't want to penalise the people doing the right thing that perhaps just miss out a little bit on this. But it is a significant issue that people are concerned about, and especially for older people. It is actually, you know, they've got their gardens and they get the mess on there by the cats, and sometimes, you know, it's the cats kind of the last straw as far as what else is going on. So we need to take that into account. I guess we'll see what happens with it. I hope if there are any issues that arise that need some action, that it is brought to our attention, and perhaps we can mitigate some of those problems.
Anyone else speaking against? Councillor Schilling.
I have a question first. Question regarding, compared to what we currently do, if this comes into place, what will change?
Ms. Perrin.
Through the chair, currently council hires out for a refundable deposit, so it's actually free apart from the refundable deposit, cat cages to the community, and if they have a problem cat and it's caught, if it's identified, they need to release it or return it to the owner, or they can impound it at one of the registered pounds, which the closest to us is RSPCA at Lonsdale. So in essence, that won't change. What will change is that if this bylaw is approved, that it will create offences for the owners of cats, for their cat to wander outside of those curfew times, or to not be contained on their property. And so they could be expiated, but you'll see in the report that it is planned to have a communication and education strategy to explain to the community about the bylaw and to assist them. Already staff do currently provide a lot of information to members of the public. We have links on our website to the Doncat Management Board's information about being responsible cat owners, and we have brochures that we give out about some of the things you can put on a fence to keep your cat in your yard so it doesn't go into your neighbour's yard. So all of that will stay the same.
Great, thank you. And one last question is, if we pass this tonight, and my understanding it has to go to the Parliament and the Parliament has to approve the bylaw, what happens if the Parliament says, no, not going to happen?
I can tell you that one, having served on the Legislative Review Committee. If the bylaw is knocked back, that's that. It's dead. It's gone. You can start again. You can put in another format, and sometimes there's a kind of a negotiation or advice from the committee that could be taken on board, but you basically, you don't have to start, you know, with a completely new round of consultation necessarily, but basically you're starting again.
Great, thank you. I'll
take and your contribution, please do.
I'm speaking against this motion. I agree with Councillor Duncan on the concerns she's raised. I was at the dog park just on Saturday talking to someone who has a dog and has several cats, and they are very concerned that if their cat was to get out, now they are a responsible cat owner and their cats are indoor cats, but if their cat was to get out somehow, that someone could trap it and could dispose of it without council knowing. And I am very concerned that we're going to give microchip reads out. Yes, okay, it gets identified, but what's going to be put in place to ensure that that cat gets put back to the right person? And I'm really concerned that cats are just going to be destroyed. And I have issues with feral cats, but I don't think we're dealing with domestic cats. They're two different things. And I'm really concerned that we are going to be affecting good cat owners. I understand there's bad cat owners, there's bad dog owners, there's bad hamster owners. But I'm really worried that we're going to be penalising people that actually do the right thing, which is majority of the community. I'm also worried that that we are going to see not overly huge amount of changes compared to what we're doing now. I understand it's going to be fines, but I'm also worried how we're going to police that.
Anyone else speaking in favour? Councillor Pryor had a question, perhaps?
I do have a question. The question is for Mr. Skull about how we're going to police this bylaw.
Mr. Skull.
Thank you, Chair. We will be having staff out in the field watching out for cats during the curfew time, I would presume.
If I may, through the chair, thank you.
Karen.
So the curfew times will be set if endorsed by council and the bylaw is passed. The cage will be lent for a refundable deposit as it is now to members of the community. Then, so say in the morning, if the resident finds that the cat is in the cage, they will contact council. One of council's community safety inspectors will go out during their hours of operation, and at which we can have some flexibility if there's a real pressing ongoing need in an area. But generally speaking, during the hours that the community safety inspectors work, and then they will try to identify the cat, and they would then return the cat home, explain to the cat owner the requirements of the bylaw and that their obligation hasn't been met. So they'll educate, provide advice and follow an enforcement path in keeping with council's enforcement policy.
Councillor Pryor, do you have further?
Is the plan to give out microchip readers with the traps or not?
That was endorsed at the last council meeting.
So that is the plan?
Yes.
Okay. I'm not sure I agree with that part of the plan, because if our council inspectors are going to go out there anyway with a microchip reader to identify the cat, why are we giving the community members microchip readers?
Ms. Perrin?
A microchip scanner will assist the resident to know if the cat is identified, and that then to know that they can't necessarily, that they should release it or to call council. So one of the things it may prevent, and it will be hard to know until this is implemented and enforced, is it may help leave the need for council staff to go to every cat that is trapped, because that would certainly have quite a resource impact.
And just a final question about having a cat in a cage that's not happy and using a microchip scanner on it, how does that work?
When the cage is lent or is borrowed by the resident, there would be information given to that resident on how to do it, and it would be recommended that as best as they could to try to scan it from the cat's in the inside the cage, that they try to scan it from the outside without the need for them to have to go in to the cage, handle it, and then they could at least satisfy that they've taken all reasonable steps to try to identify the cat, because certainly is to be noted that if a cat has been in a cage, it may be agitated or a stranger coming to handle it, that we don't want our residents getting injured by that. So we feel that that is a good compromise, that they've then taken some reasonable steps to try to identify. Also, they may not even need to use a scanner, because they may know that a particular cat is their neighbour's. They may have seen it, it may have a collar, they might be able to see the tag through the cage, and they know it belongs to the neighbour. They then have an obligation that they should be returning that, or when they ring council staff, the enforcement process will continue. But we certainly don't want residents injuring themselves.
But if I can't use a scanner properly, then the cat appears to be unidentified, correct?
It may not be unidentified, but the resident would ring council, the council staff member would go out, and they would take all reasonable steps they can to identify the cat.
One question following on from that. What information does the capturing person get from reading the microchip on the cat?
I may have to take that on notice, Your Worship, but I believe just to say that it's identified or not, but we would need to, certainly we're mindful of some privacy concerns, so we may need to just take that on notice.
I was just wondering if it's name, address, date of birth. Councillor Schilling.
I actually have a microchip reader at home. I know it sounds weird.
$30 you can tell off us eBay. About your hobbies later. Now, what's the information?
It only identifies the microchip number, so it's usually about a 16-digit number. We found a lost dog. We took it home. It was just the microchip number. Took it to the vet. They did the same thing. It's just the number. So then they contact the microchip company and get all the details from there.
That reassures us about the privacy issue. Thank you. Councillor Velescu.
General inspectors.
Through the chair, a report will be brought back to council in about June. The current hours of service were endorsed by council as of the 1st of April 2019, so after 12 months of operation, and so after that can be analysed and the number of complaints and information be looked at, then a report will be brought back to council.
I'm advised that there'll be an informal briefing on the 17th of March, which will be the first part of that process. And in terms of tying it in with the bylaw, I suspect it will take months before you get an answer, minimum, if passed tonight, in terms of the parliamentary response, I mean.
Thank you. So I just wanted to clarify, we've been told that someone's cat will be returned to them, they'll be educated, and then there'll be the pathway of enforcement. Can we have a bit more clarity what that actually means?
Councillor Coombs.
If I may, through the chair. Yep, so our council adopted enforcement policy, which is on our webpage, talks about the steps necessary to undertake an enforcement, and essentially going through the motions of no action right through to expiating. There's steps that our CSIs follow all the time in deciding whether to expiate. And if, you know, if a clear breach of the bylaw has occurred and there is sufficient evidence to expiate, our staff expiate. Failing that, they do have options before then for the elderly residents, as raised earlier in the debate, who may need to be educated in a first instance. However, people that are known to us, people that breach it regularly, would be expiated.
Okay. Just a minor point of clarification. It's actually the person who receives the notice who expiates the fine. The staff issue an expiation notice. Not being critical, just trying to get it clear. Councillor Velescu?
And my final question is, we currently lend cat cages to people. If someone was to use a cat cage now to catch a cat and dispose of it illegally or kill it, how will that change when the bylaw comes in? Will that have any impact on someone's ability to do something nasty to a cat?
Mr. Della Coombs?
Thank you, through the chair. That won't change. That could occur now. That would be an offence, and RSPCA would deal with cruelty to animals issues.
Or the perception that people have that the cats are now not meant to be there, is that the risk? That
in terms of perception of risk, I mean, that's probably for elected members to judge, and it's what the education campaign is meant to counter. Any other speakers? Then Councillor Crossland, anything to finish with?
Just a few things to sum up. Firstly, the shift workers. Most people will know I'm a shift worker. I'll tell you what, it's easier to keep a cat in all night than it is a dog. You can have a cat litter tray, as I'm advised, and rather than leaving your dog to mess in the house. I worked in London. Most people in apartment blocks had home cats. They didn't ever let them out. They had little balconies and caged those so they didn't fall out. So I think that's a little bit of a furphy, that one. As Councillor Valescu has mentioned, plenty of people already catch cats. In fact, the people who want to catch cats and kill them don't hire the cat cage from council. I can tell you that would be a pretty dumb thing to do. The other thing that's mentioned is I'm surprised a lot of cat owners aren't in favour of this, because most of the issues out there surely aren't responsible cat owners' cats that are going into people's gardens, causing damage, making a mess, because that's already illegal. This is the feral cats that's going to take out of that population. So hopefully we'll have less and less people grumbling about cats, because the cats that are causing the issue are feral cats.
All those in favour, please raise your hand. Just keep them raised for a sec. I see 8 people voting. Those against, raise your hand. 2. It's carried 8-2. Division is called. All those in favour, please stand. Those in the affirmative, Councillors Mason, Valescu, Clancy, Pryor, Hull, Telfer, Guard and Crossland. You may sit down. Those against, Councillors Schilling and Duncan. So the motion is carried by an absolute majority.